I'd opened and put back on the table and downed the entire drink.
Push over.
Come again? I asked, willing myself to stay calm. Alex angled his body toward mine, a dark smirk on his lips.
I said you're a pushover. You did what I told you to do, never fighting back, never saving face.
Saving face? I blinked rapidly, trying hard not to scream in his face. This man. I don't need to save any face. You wanted me to hook you up, I did. You're just disappointed I didn't fight over you. But guess what? I'm not them. The fangirls, the women with stars in the eyes. When I look at you... I took a step toward him, and he took a step forward too, and it was all too wrong and too close and too intimate all at once. When I look at you, I see something broken that isn't worth fixing, and you look at me like I'm a cheap thing to replace the expensive one that's been stolen from you. See, we're all vases. And you're the one scattered on the floor, shattered beyond repair. So I'll let someone else pick you up. It's really that simple. Have fun with your temporary glue. My gaze swept across the room to find the mystery girl already giggling and signing the contract she pressed against Blake's back, while the latter was texting on his phone in boredom. Alex unleashed a toxic smile, his gaze narrowing on mine as he broke our physical stare off and began walking to her.
Congratulations, sport. You just became a war.
That night, I heard them through the wall, their hands shuffling, feeling, searching, finding, walking down the hall, our hall, right outside my door, stumbling, giggling, breathlessly whispering, "Stop it, heart. Stay still, heart. Fight it, heart." Her name was Gina. I knew because he leaned down and let her sniff his neck when she said he smelled like the malest thing she'd ever met. Malest wasn't even a word. And I immediately hated all the Ginas in the world.
Gina.
He rasped her name like a dirty secret. I peeked at them through the peephole, every bone in my body shaking with rage.
Darlin', if you only had a clue.
Darlin'. He dropped the G for Gina. I was so consumed by their moment, I found it hard to breathe. Oh, I saw. She laughed, her sultry voice perfect against his skin, nothing like my high-pitched one. Your cock's all over the internet, Alex. To that, he said nothing. He stopped by my door, took out his chewed gum from his mouth, plastered a small note into it, and slammed it against the peephole. Then I heard his door open. Then I heard his door close. I opened mine quickly, slipping my arm to take the note he'd left for me. You are the glue. I turned around, squeezing my eyelids and banging my head against the door. 3, 2, 1.
Alex. 3, 2, 1. The sound was faint, but it was there. The exasperation in her movements lit something in me. I felt her pain. Tasted it on my lips and savored it like hot honey on my tongue. I smiled into my kiss with what's her face? My tool, my container, my bait, my prop for this lesson. Finally, Stardust was beginning to get it. It. Us. We were going to fuck. Her head banging against the door assured me of that. Lucas was going to pay. He was going to pay for giving Will the keys to my apartment when I was on tour and Fallon OD'd. He'd found her. Lucas was going to pay for giving Fallon Will's phone number when she'd asked for it, to thank him after he'd rushed to save the day. Pay for helping them slip under the radar at the Grammys 3 years ago, when she was on my arm but ended up fucking Will in the bathroom. Pay for all of those things with the most precious thing money couldn't buy. Lucas was going to pay for them with his heart.
Chapter 12. Indy. Anyone up? Jenna. I am. It's the middle of the night there. What's wrong? Indy. Nothing's wrong. Sorry. A question for future reference. Is Alex allowed to bring girls to his room? I mean, they might have alcohol or drugs. Jenna. They might, but they probably won't. Yes, it's fine. Jenna. Or maybe it's not completely fine for you. Indy. All is good. I just wanted to make sure. Jenna. Did you tell him about the 10-minute song? Indy. Yes, he's keeping it. The crowd went nuts for it today. He also wrote a political song. Jenna. Of course he did. Indy. It's great, actually. Jenna. Great will get you nowhere in the music industry. He needs catchy and fast. People DNF 3-minute songs these days. Indy. DNF? Jenna. Do not finish. How are you two getting along? How much time do you have, lady? Indy. Well, he's no longer actively trying to get rid of me. Jenna. And Blake? You and him are on the same wavelength? Indy. We are. Are you? Jenna. Did you actually just ask me that question? Indy. Yep. I had nothing to lose. Jenna needed me there. Plus, they weren't exactly secretive about hating each other. Jenna. Blake and I are complicated. I have contracts to sort through. Keep me updated. Hudson. Shocked face. Singapore. I spent the plane ride Skyping with Nat and Ziggy, curled on the sofa by the window. Alex was wearing Wayfarers and a black hoodie, his arms folded over his chest, draped on a couch, asleep. He had earbuds in his ears and looked like the closest thing to women's porn while being fully clothed. I tried to tell myself it was a good thing that he'd done what he did with Gina. It clarified what we were, and more importantly, what we weren't. He came back in the middle of the night. Nat rubbed her red eyes, bouncing Ziggy on her thigh. Her hair was a knotted mess, drunk as hell and reeking of puke. Said he'd been looking for the killer all day, knocked on people's doors, yelled at them. Do you realize how crazy this sounds? He needs help, Indy. Fast. She was right, of course. I was starting to believe my brother needed much more than a job. He needed rehab. With the money I was making, we could afford to send him to a decent one. Even more incentive to stay on tour and tolerate Alex. I cleared my throat, glancing sideways to make sure no one was listening. 2.5 months, I soothed. Just hang in there, Nat. I promise I'll set him straight when I'm back. It's like he's not even the same person anymore. I mean, I get it. He's still hurting. But I married a stranger. I had a baby with a stranger. I look at him and don't see the boy who serenaded me outside my window. I see a slacker who doesn't want to get better. A slacker that boy would have hated. I opened my mouth, about to answer when the flight attendant breezed in, wearing a satin baby blue uniform and the best customer service smile I'd seen in years. Gentlemen, Miss Bellamy, we're getting prepared for landing. Please buckle up. I need to go. I wrinkled my nose, hating to cut off the conversation prematurely. Nat looked older, like her last few nights had been as long as years. At least tell me you're having fun over there. It would make me feel a lot better. Sure, I smiled. Great time. Managed to catch a glimpse of any English rock star sausages. She replaced her exasperated frown with a heartened sniff. Oh, God. Alex's pouty lips twitched, even through his pretense of sleep. My face burned all the way up to my roots, then down to my toes. She couldn't have known he was right there. The plane was quiet, with everyone either napping or watching a movie. No, I said.
Yes,
he announced at the same time from his place on the sofa, flicking his sunglasses to a nearby table and standing up. He swaggered toward me, his devil-may-care smirk on display. My heart did that thing again, where it disobeyed my mind and wanted to jump into Alex's hands. What the hell was Winslow doing?
Oh, she saw my cock, all right.
He dropped on the love seat next to me, breaking the news like it was an international matter. His arms snaked behind me, his chin almost resting on my shoulder.
And she stared, real long,
which prompted me to ask her how many cocks she'd seen in real life, a question I still have no answer to. Maybe you could enlighten me. Cute kid, by the way.
Natasha's jaw dropped, and if it weren't for the fact Ziggy had managed to slip out of her embrace and skip away toward the kitchen, she'd be sitting there and ogling Alex until we were back on U.S. soil.
You look great in real life, she breathed out, eyes as wide as saucers.
Not technically real life, but I'll take it.
Alex's broad, tight shoulder brushed into mine, and I winced, inching away from him.
I'm trying to convince Indy to warm up to me. How do you think I should do that?
You're trying to get me into your bed, I wanted to correct. And here's the first thing on your to-do list. Don't ask me to hook you up with random chicks named Gina.
She likes cycling.
Nat's smile was sinister and sweet at the same time, and I wanted to be that way. Dangerous and unassuming at the same time. She would cycle all day if she could, so I'd start with that. He nodded.
Good idea, Natasha.
Oh, wow, you know my name.
I pay attention when she speaks.
He was putting his charmer face on. Great. No one could say no to that, Nat included.
He's a keeper, my sister-in-law said before turning off the camera.
I shook my head. He was the opposite of a keeper. He was the guy I knew for sure was going to walk away. I shut the laptop screen, my heart drumming against my throat. Alex tilted his body forward, his lips close to my shoulder blade.
I'm going to have you, he whispered. Glue.
My eyes burned, and I stared ahead at Alfie's blonde curls as he looked down playing a Nintendo game. For the first time in a long time, I knew I was in deep trouble, something I couldn't control, because Alex Winslow was a broken vase. But I wasn't the glue. I was the stupid cleaner who was about to try to pick up the pieces and inevitably get cut. The minute I stepped into my hotel room, I started pacing. Fingers laced behind my neck, I walked in circles. My limbs felt different. Shorter, heavier, more tense. It was the lack of physical exercise and all the crappy food, I concluded. I hadn't cycled at all since we'd started the tour. Plus, Alex had a thing for gas station sandwiches and street food, which left us without decent catering, and therefore eating junk or too rich room service most of the time. I dropped my head, worrying my lip. Being away from home felt like a betrayal. Guilt ate at my insides for not being able to help Nat with Ziggy when she needed me the most. But what truly horrified me was that I still found myself being occupied with Alex Winslow's privates when so much was at stake. A knock on the door made my head shoot up. All the hotel rooms I'd been in so far were different, some bright and some dark, some classically furnished and some contemporarily decorated, yet held the same melancholy of a place that never offered true intimacy. This room had peachy walls, high ceilings, and linen the color of gold. It looked luxurious beyond words, like something you would copy and paste from a bridal catalog, and I couldn't enjoy it when my loved ones were suffering two continents away. Another knock, this time harder. Geez, I'm coming! I made my way to the door, still dressed in my black and white plaid dress. One of the first I'd made for myself. My hair was a mess, and my eyes were red-rimmed. I swung the door open. Alex stood on the other side of the threshold. He'd changed from his usual plain attire. Now he was wearing skinny jeans and a Smith's t-shirt. He looked delicious. He also looks like a man who slept with someone else last night, little Miss Dementia.
What do you want, Winslow?
I cut straight to the chase. I had neither desire nor the need to be polite to him. He shouldn't even be walking around by himself. Where was Blake?
Stardust?
He rolled the nickname on his tongue, his British accent slicing through the letters prominently. To what do I owe this dubious pleasure? Also, am I talking to the charming, playful Alex today, or to the jerk who made me help him score last night? I quirked an eyebrow, collecting my hair into a high and messy bun.
Glad we finally established I'm charming.
Sometimes, when you're trying to be. Big difference.
But it's working.
Not really.
I lied. All walled up and waiting to be defrosted. That's how I like you.
He grabbed my hand and jerked me out of my room in one swift movement.
You're like a piece of delicious toffee in a thin wrapper. It's tedious work to peel your layers off, but whatever's waiting for me inside is too sweet to pass. I'm about to smash those walls of yours to dust. It will take you years building them back. But I won't be there when it happens, so no big deal.
I glued my feet to the carpeted floor, looking around us. He had a show in 6 hours. He was probably going to try for some hanky-panky in the hallway. He ushered me down the hall, and I dragged my feet like he was leading me straight to the gates of hell. Still, I couldn't turn around and leave him in the hallway, alone and dangerously free to do whatever he wanted. Besides, there was a surprise at the end of this journey, and I wanted to see what it was. Alex slapped his open palm against the elevator button and turned around. He crowded me with his body. I stepped back. He stepped forward. A tango I was getting used to by now. Where's Blake? Why are you here? My eyes narrowed.
Chained him to my bed and nailed him to the headboard.
Does he know you're with me? I ignored his stupid joke. He bowed a playful brow. This particular expression drove me mad. It implied I was his cute baby sister who just made macaroni art and showed it to him.
Let's get one thing straight. Blake, he's on my payroll. Waitrose, on my payroll. Alfie, gross human being and on my payroll. So are you. You're answering to me, and right now I want to be with you, so I will. It's really that simple, you see.
I opened my mouth to say something that would make me feel crappy and push him away, but the elevator pinged, and he pulled me in by the little belt of my dress, my back slamming against the wall. He leaned against the opposite wall, and that's how we stared at each other, like two opponents in a very screwed-up game. For the first time, he seemed to notice how red my eyes were. He squinted down at me.
What's on your mind?
My brother is acting up back home. It worries me. Natasha is pretty much taking care of Ziggy by herself and working full-time, and... And I was blabbing. I looked away at the mahogany wood and mirrors around us. He didn't say anything, and for that I was grateful. I didn't need empty words of encouragement. I knew my situation, owned up to it, and was working toward fixing it. The elevator slid open, and we both stepped out. Alex directed me to the hallway behind the main reception, not the front entrance of the hotel, where we walked through a darkened passage leading to the underground parking lot. I said nothing and felt everything. When he finally stopped, I looked up from my feet and saw two blue city bikes. My eyebrows shot up. Bikes, I breathed.
Perceptive,
he sassed. I swear British people were born with more sarcasm running in their veins than blood. I laughed, swatting him lightly across the shoulder, too relieved to get mad at him. I ran to one of the bikes and swung one leg over it, squeezing the handles in my palms. They felt different from my bike at home. The seat was higher than I was used to, and the fabric was tougher, not as worn out as mine. I kicked the brake, allowing the bicycle to slide a few feet forward inside the hot and humid underground parking lot. It was mostly empty. I could cycle around here and blow off some steam. I voiced my thought aloud. He was still standing next to the other bike, staring at me.
Oh?
His voice was particularly unicy.
You can get your little bum outside.
Just as he said that, he slammed a button on the concrete wall behind him, and the metal garage gate slid up, light pouring in inch by inch. My eyes widened at the skyscrapers, and huge, dazzling harbor spread before me. My breath caught in my throat. I gulped in the Merlion spitting water, the integrated resort of Marina Bay, and the unbelievably systematized cityscape. Before I knew it, his elbow touched mine, and he was on his bike next to me. No helmets? I grinned despite my best intentions. Man whore or not, I missed biking around the city, and it was just a little trip, not a love declaration.
I like to live on the edge.
He licked his lower lip. I like to live safely within the lines. I retorted.
It's a comfortable place to be, but nothing ever grows there.
We rode through the Merlion Park. He had his shades on and the same Burberry cap he'd worn at the laundromat, so no one could have guessed he was Alex Winslow, the man who kept the paparazzi awake at night. The sky was gray. The air was dense and moist. The weather reminded me of the apocalypse, and maybe it was fitting, because he'd destroyed so many of my walls that day. Everything was clean and foreign. I might have been a more experienced cyclist, but he had longer legs and the stamina to keep up with me. We cycled silently for 40 minutes before he jerked his head toward a little coffee shop by the promenade.
Dusty.
A statement, not a question. I nodded, and we both took a curve and rested our bikes outside the small cafe. We were about to head inside, but then he hesitated, took one look at the busy tables outside the shop, and groaned.
Go order. I'll wait out here,
he said, swinging his long leg back on the bike and staring ahead at the sapphire ocean. I made my way to the counter, relishing the idea that, unlike him, I could. I wouldn't know how I'd feel if I couldn't even order coffee or a sandwich without the fear of being ambushed or photographed. I placed an order for 2 coffees, 2 waters, and a pastry we could split. When I turned around, I saw him throwing little rocks he held in his fist into the peaceful water, still on his bike. He looked happy, like he wasn't used to doing something so mundane and casual. Alex smiled when I got back and hoisted myself back up on my bike, and my heart almost threw itself at him like a stupid groupie throwing panties. That heart of mine was starting to feel a lot like a liability. I wished I could surgically remove it and stay alive. I handed him his coffee and water, putting my cup of joe to my lips.
What are you thinking about now?
He asked, his eyes still hypnotized by the water. I wondered why he wanted to know that all the time. Did he really find inspiration in whatever had gone through my head? Then something even more depressing occurred to me. No one else had asked me that in years. Not since my parents died. Craig and Natasha, they loved me, but they were too busy surviving to care. Feeling wanted and desired was addictive, and he doped me. If you want to put a spell on someone, make them feel special. That would do the trick. I'm just wondering. I let the hot liquid burn my tongue, but continued without even flinching. Why are you after me? You seemed to want me gone, and now you want to sleep with me.
I figured if I couldn't get rid of you, at least I can have fun with you.
I'll never sleep with you. I poked at the pastry without even considering eating it. Alex took a big gulp of coffee, still looking at the ocean.
Why?
Because I'm not as stupid as to willingly put myself in a position where I get hurt. He swiveled his head to face me. And suddenly I couldn't breathe. Like all artistic geniuses, he had an expressive face. Kind of funny looking. Sort of imperfect. The type you couldn't look away from. Mick Jagger, Steven Tyler, Jimi Hendrix, Keith Richards. They all looked a little funny. A little too mischievous. With mouths too wide and eyes too droopy and smiles too open. Alex's face was like a great book. Every time you looked at it, you found a different something.
I'd never hurt you. I will leave you kindly, and you will leave me happily. That I can promise.
How can you promise me that? How can you promise me I wouldn't fall in love? He looked up from his coffee, a sad smile on his face.
I'm sort of unlovable once you get to know me.
Silence.
My appeal is in my mystery, you see.
Rain started pouring down on us, seemingly out of nowhere. Tropical weather. Short sleeves and a downpour. He tilted his head to the other side of the promenade.
Come, Stardust. The night is young and full of promise.
We rolled to the parking lot, dripping and laughing. And I decided not to ask Alex Winslow any personal questions, just to keep my sanity at bay.
Chapter 13. Alex. Another show. Another hit. Blake speculated that the YouTube video's views of secondhand love that had been leaked from Japan were so high, whoever had posted it was making 20 grand a day from ads alone. Not gonna lie, writing a great song numbed the notion of being categorically defective as a human being. And for a day there, I'd even forgotten about Fallon and Will and revenge and the champagne. Side note, the latter sat in the back of my mind the whole time. I didn't even like champagne. Getting pissed, though, was another story. When I got off the stage, I rushed to the dressing room, disregarding the shambolic queue of staff and local celebrities milling around trying to get a moment with me. I threw the door open and collapsed right on top of Indy, who was sitting on a silver sofa, sewing.
"Alex, gross! Get off my fabric!"
She pushed my chest, but there was laughter in her voice. I climbed atop of her like a monkey and tickled her armpits. And what do you know? Indy Bellamy was ticklish. She squirmed and made the most fuckable sounds, making me want to stuff my fingers into her mouth and take out those little sounds and put them in my pocket.
"Off! Off, you caveman! Off!"
That hint of a giggle bloomed into a full-blown laugh. Something had changed. We'd changed. She'd melted a little, and I wanted to shove off the ice and see what was underneath. Alfie, Blake, and Lucas walked through the door, watching us from the threshold, mesmerized. It thrilled me, the look on Lucas's face. I didn't even need to lift my head to see it to know it was there. He was hurting. Not in the way I was hurting when he'd booked the hotel for Will and Fallon under his name so they could fuck when I was still with her, but still. "Make me," I growled into her face, so close I could see every individual orange freckle peppered across her nose.
"This is sexual harassment,"
she laughed breathlessly. "Don't embarrass yourself." I pinned her to the sofa, my crotch on hers, my lips on her cheek so only she could hear me. "I bet if I slide my fingers up that fancy dress of yours and push your knickers aside, I'm going to find you so soaked and ready for me, it would take me an hour to lick you dry." Her body stiffened beneath me, and I elevated my upper body, glancing down at her. Her blue eyes were so wide and curious. I wondered if she was a virgin. Indy with another guy. I couldn't picture it, and not because I was attached or some sentimental crap along those lines. She just seemed too reserved, too proper.
"Alex,"
she warned, too afraid to move underneath me, knowing my erection was dangerously close to her cunt. It was crazy, but this was perfect. This, me on top of her. The only things between us were fabric and the idiots watching us from across the room. Her body was humming, and I could feel it beneath me, struggling between lust and logic. I lowered my face to hers, when some cocksucker grabbed me by the belt loop and yanked me away from her.
"Get off her, you wanker!"
Lucas barked. When I turned around, he looked pink and pissed, not unlike Babe the Pig.
"You're out of control!"
"So is she."
I fished for my cigarette pack in my back pocket and lit one up, blowing smoke into his face.
"It's called passion. You wouldn't recognize it if it pissed directly into your mouth."
"You're such a twat. You know that."
"Know it, live it. Sorry, St. Lucas. Not all of us can maintain such high moral standards."
"Alex!"
Indy scolded. Fine, I shut up. The ride to the hotel was wordless. Indy looked out the window. Lucas looked at me. Blake looked at his phone. And Alfie looked at his watch.
"I'm expecting 3 fans in half an hour. Think we'll make it in time?"
The latter poked his lower lip out. Everyone groaned, and I threw the blue pick he'd thrown at me in L.A. right at his face. He laughed.
"Oh, we've come full circle now."
In the hallway, I flat out collapsed by my door, watching Indy do the same. It was past midnight, and everyone went to their rooms. Lucas knew better than to push me by loitering around her. Indy had her cloth duffel bag with a patched dress stuffed into it, the one she'd been working on backstage. I plucked the notepad and Sharpie out of Tanya's case and stared up at my muse, waiting for her to feed me spoonfuls of her soul. Knowing I didn't deserve her. Knowing she didn't deserve this. Knowing how fucked everything was, but not being able to stop, because I wanted revenge, and an album, and solace. And Indy? She would get her money. Hell, I might even throw in a couple more $100,000 to sweeten the deal for her. And I'd be to her what I was to so many others. A good story to tell her mates when she was piss drunk at a hen party. I fucked a rock star once, and it was great. What are you working on? I jutted my chin to her bag. She grinned. What?
Nothing. It's just that you're the only person who asks me stuff. Most people just tell me things, you know?
Well, you're not utterly boring, and you're here, so you might as well spit it out.
Address for Paris. My favorite city in the entire world.
I thought you'd never been on a plane before.
I hadn't.
She batted her eyelashes and did some little girly claps, looking so utterly ridiculous it was almost endearing. Looks patchy, I observed. They were white and pink and cream patches sewn together deliberately out of order, like a patchwork blanket. She fingered the fabric with her thin fingers.
It's a little ugly. Isn't it beautiful?
It was my turn to smirk. I strummed my fingers on Tanya. You find ugly things pretty. Tell me more. What she said came out in one breath, like she'd been waiting to tell me this, waiting for our midnight date.
Anything essential is invisible to the eye.
My eyes shot up. I'd recognize those words anywhere. The Little Prince.
Have you read it?
Indy asked. I snorted. You can say that again. She squeezed the tip of my boot, her eyes probing. Was I really going to share this with her? Whatever. Why the fuck not? My family was the furthest thing from bookworms. I don't think we had one book in our house, save for the Bible. We were skint as hell. But my dad had a brother, George, who lived in Notting Hill. Made his money composing songs for kids' shows. It was my dream to go live with him. But George was a womanizer and a terrible drunk. And even though he loved me, he certainly didn't love me enough to give up on his precious vices. When I was 8 or 9, George gave me a rare birthday gift. A hard copy of The Little Prince. He said to look for the meaning of the book, and once I found it, he'd buy me my first guitar. He said that no musician deserves as much as a pinch of success before they truly understand the meaning of life, and that he'd know if I cheated and asked. And anyway, I didn't want to. I wanted to earn that fucking guitar. Wanted her to come to me justly and deservingly. For the next couple years, I was consumed by this book. Every year I saw him at Christmas, I tried my luck, decoding the meaning of this goddamn book. All I got was nonsense about some little twat asking people to paint him a sheep. Until 2 years after he gave me the book, now worn and old and stained with mustard and milk, it dawned on me. All true meanings are hidden. Life is full of secrets, and narrow-minded people, and sugar-coated empty conversations that hold no weight. What's real is what's inside us. What's important is what we feel. That day I rang him, and he picked me up from Watford, even though I could have taken the train. That day I got Tanya. That day changed my life. I squeezed the length of my acoustic guitar. I'd stopped playing Tanya at unplugged gigs years ago, but I still carried her everywhere. You don't throw away your gran because she gets too old to bake your favourite pie. Tanya was, after all, my first and only genuine friend. Indy caressed the fabric of her work in progress in circles, nodding.
I always loved The Little Prince because it always felt like I too belong on another planet. Like I can barely even survive the world I live in, and don't necessarily understand why things are the way they are.
Indy licked her lips. She tucked her chin to her chest, her eyelashes floating on her cheeks. I stared, gulped, averted my gaze. Fuck. She was beautiful. It was hard to believe she was the same girl from the Chateau Marmont. The one I'd looked at and seen a strange lass with a funny dress, weird hair and a too freckled face. I looked down at my notepad and started writing. Can you keep a secret? Sometimes I look at you and all I see is regret. My little passion pit is out of this world, dictates my every lyric and note and word. I do all the things I want to do to you in the dark, but time knows and sees and notices every mark. And sometimes I want you, but most times I don't. I should leave you alone, but we both know I won't. I realized I was running out of paper, but the words kept on gushing out. They rushed in a stream, and I needed to capture them as they were, desolate, feral, unfucking hinged. I grabbed Indy's hand and pulled her into my body. She stumbled across the tight space between us right onto my lap, her mouth falling open. I didn't care. It wasn't about sex. It was art, and art was divine. It overruled everything. And this wasn't even my bullshitter speaking. I actually believed that. I need you to take your dress off. I tugged at the thick fabric of her frilly number. Her eyes widened and she jerked away. Oh, how I wished she were one of my groupies in that moment. But if she were, we wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be feeding off of her memories and stories and reveries. That was the thing about Stardust. She stood toe-to-toe with me, even though I was taller, stronger, richer. She made me feel... real.
Here? Jesus H., please don't tell me you're drunk.
She looked around the hallway, checking that it was empty. I gripped the hem of her dress and dragged her toward me, my eyes roaming, looking for the buttons or zipper or whatever to get her out of her dress.
I need to write on something and my notepad is full. No one will see you. The lads are fast asleep, and Alfie's girls only just arrived. Even that dickhead can keep them busy for at least 20 minutes. The whole floor is reserved for us. It's just you and me, Stardust. I need your back.
And your words. And that song that kept playing in my head.
I'm the king with no subjects. The vain man with no crowd. The drunk twat who's always so fucking loud. And you're the rivers and mountains. Maybe even the oxygen itself. You're the wind that carries me from place to place. The only high I always chase.
No!
Inside, I screamed my frustration. But on the outside, I just looked at her with mild disinterest. No.
Just right on my arms. Better yet, on yours, they're thicker.
Not enough space, and I need to break it into paragraphs.
No.
Why? My eyelids were twitching. I was pretty sure that wasn't a good sign.
Because you slept with someone else yesterday.
She looked surprised at my even asking. I licked my lips slowly before opening them, enjoying the way her gaze clung to them.
I didn't sleep with Gina.
Huh?
Never intended to, either. I kissed her, right, but only to piss you off. And honestly, I don't remember what she tasted like, just your reaction to it, which made my cock really fucking happy. The only person I want to fuck right now is you. The second I heard you across the hall banging your head against the door, I threw her in Alfie's room and went into the bathroom for a quick wank. But don't feel sorry for our little friend Gina. Alfie gave her what she needed and then some. I meant what I said, Stardust. I want to screw the words out of you. Just you. Until the end of this tour, it's only you and me.
The silence between us reminded me that seduction was like a game of Monopoly. It required patience and planning and reading your opponent. Just because I'd hit the jackpot and had a pocket stuffed with fake money didn't mean shite.
She could still say no. She could still win the game. Not giving her the chance to deny me, I brought my calloused palm to her back and rolled the zipper down. She let me, if for no other reason than the relief she felt knowing I hadn't slept with that Aussie bird. Or maybe she finally understood what we were, floating in the world with no roots or ground or gravity. Mistakes and sins and errors were the bones of my kingdom. Everything felt different away from home. And so she allowed herself not to be herself, just for tonight. When the top portion of her dress slid down, Stardust turned around quickly, covering the small, perky tits I didn't get the chance to see. I uncapped the Sharpie with my teeth and started writing on her smooth back, taking great pleasure in knowing it was going to stay there for days. The Sharpie danced along her spine, and I gulped each time her body shivered against the bright red tip of the marker. My cock sprang to life, but now wasn't the time. And I would travel from asteroid to asteroid, trying to find the one that would be ours, building palace after palace until it feels like home, from London to Paris, from New York to Rome. The Little Prince, Alex Winslow. I paused, staring at my own terrible handwriting. Her skin blossomed again.
It's cold.
She cleared her throat, grasping for her dress, her tits still covered by her arm. Bullshit. She was hornier than a unicorn.
Let's go inside. You can copy it onto a notepad.
I leaned forward and kissed the valley between her shoulder and neck, her skin coming alive and heating under my lips. The next words I whispered as seductively as I possibly could. I didn't normally need to put in an effort, but with this one, I had to. If I don't fuck you soon, I will die, and it will be on your conscience.
Jesus Christ.
You can call me that in bed if you're inclined to. I retorted, my lips skimming her drug-like skin. What was it about her that felt like home? It was senseless. I didn't even fucking like home. I didn't fucking have a home. Home was where my useless parents sat on their asses all day spending my money. Isn't that what the Little Prince is about? Being tamed and taming others. We don't have to do that here, Stardust. It's just us. No grown-ups.
We are supposed to be the grown-ups.
No one is a grown-up when given a choice. It's something you're forced into. Pause.
I've already told you, Alex. I'm not a fling type of girl.
You're young and available and fit. You shouldn't be so closed off. Get drunk. Fuck famous blokes. Post pictures of yourself all over the world on Instagram. You should live and make mistakes. And I'm offering to be one of those mistakes. Because you have nothing to lose. We have an expiration date. We have a deadline. We have endless five-star hotel rooms and an album to write and your family to save. And just fucking admit it. All arrows point in the same direction. Us. Together. For now.
And after now?
She turned around to stare at me.
What happens after now, Alex?
What do you mean?
When the tour is over, what do we do then?
We go our separate ways. Wasn't it obvious? Did she want a fucking boyfriend? Because I didn't do that shit. And even if I did, Fallon was the first and last girl I tried monogamy with. She held my heart between her manicured fingers and squeezed hard every time I considered moving on. Even if I wanted to give Indy something, which I didn't. I wasn't sure if I even could.
You will likely run into Fallon in Paris.
Indy was candid, and honest, and raw. She didn't beat around the bush, asking the tough questions, giving zero fucks if it made her sound clingy or committed. She didn't pretend to be someone she wasn't. Then we end in Paris. I brushed a lock of her hair behind her ear.
We end whenever Fallon and I begin again. Where the fuck had that come from? I mean, it was the truth, but the truth could always be softened while being shoved into someone's face. Prior commitments were my version of, I don't fucking want to do it, and busy schedule was, I'd rather choke on someone else's cock than meet you for coffee. But I wanted to get a rise from her. In fairness, I realized I was being a massive hypocrite. Here I was, just about ready to sack Lucas and throw him off the tour if he so much as looked at my sobriety companion. But I had no issue telling her, while trying to fuck her, that I was going to try to win my ex-girlfriend back. Where was my tact? Wherever it was, my charm and logic were hidden in the same dumpster.
Wow!
Her eyebrows shot up. She pulled the straps of her dress back on her shoulders and pushed up to her feet, not even bothering to zip up. The step she took to her door was shaky and clumsy and told me everything I needed to know. I'd fucked up royally.
You're such a bastard! Calling you one is an insult to every bastard inhabiting this world. We need to invent a new word for what you are.
I think the word you are looking for is cunt, I offered, dropping the open Sharpie onto the carpet and rising, about to follow her into her room. Pissed off or not, she still had my lyrics on her back.
It is what it is. We're infatuated with each other, but not enough to lose our bloody minds. Eyes on the prize, Stardust. You need the money, I need the muse and the warm body at night.
In what universe does making me sound like a whore equate to a good flirting tactic?
I'm not paying you for the sex. I'm paying you to keep me from falling off the wagon. Side bonus, you're officially not allowed to hang out with Waitrose, so it's not like you have any other options to choose from.
She turned around, giving me the same sugary smile she used when she wanted to knee my bollocks and stitch my lips together with her sewing machine.
Just out of curiosity, Alex, are you asking me to stay away from Lucas as my friend or my future fling?
I'm demanding this as your fucking boss. Never forget that, Indy.
Another thing I knew would piss her off. A door slammed in my face so hard the frame almost collapsed inward. I stared at it blankly, debating whether I should punch and kick it until she opened up, or just take the spare card Blake kept, swipe it, and storm in. I wanted to threaten her, tear her apart, then pick her up and throw her onto the bed and make her see all that we were. But all my sorry ass ended up doing was plastering my forehead to her door, closing my eyes, and taking a deep breath. 3, 2, 1.
Chapter 14. Indy. I glued my back to the door, the room coming into my vision in fragments behind the wall of unshed tears. 3, 2, 1. I wanted to open the door and hurt him, to tell him he was a world-class asshole for doing this to me, for making me feel all these things, even though he'd made it perfectly clear I didn't stand a snowball's chance in hell at ever being with him the way I deserved. Because Alex Winslow didn't do love. He only did hate. I wondered if he knew that, that he wasn't capable of giving his precious Fallon half the things a person you love should be given. Security, unconditional support, and kindness. I knew what I needed to do. I needed to march over to his room, knock on the door, and tell him to stop. Stop hitting on me. Stop trying to make us happen. Stop seducing me with his goddamn lips and lyrics and buckets of rugged charm. My lips throbbed from another kiss that had never happened, and I was irrationally angry at the world. Steam. I needed to get rid of it. Now. With those things in mind, I turned around, about to swing my door open and give him a piece of my mind. That's when I heard someone hammering on it from the other side. Blinking, I pulled it open and peeked through the slit. Alex stood there with red eyes and a mist of sweat covering his forehead, like not kicking down the door left him labored and sticky. He pushed the door the rest of the way open, silently walked in, cupped the side of my face, his thumbs on my cheeks, and kissed me. Hard. I stumbled back, off guard and unprepared, but that only made him more aggressive in his kiss. I sucked in a desperate breath just as he darted his tongue out, stroking mine. Our tongues rolled together, hungry and vicious, in a wild dance without rhythm or pace. I moaned, and he groaned, sucking on my lower lip and digging his teeth into it on a warning bite. "Do not disobey," the bite said in his English accent, "or you'll be sorry." Admittedly, I didn't think, not about how he'd managed to corner me deeper into my room in a lust-filled haze, and certainly not about the consequences. That's why when he cupped both my ass cheeks and pushed me, my back slamming against the antique dresser, I let him. He bit my lip again, this time harder, and I winced. I wanted him to know I wasn't surrendering to him. I was surrendering to my own needs. It was different, and selfish, and mine.
"I always wondered, you know." His lips ghosted mine, wet and drenched with dirty intentions. "What it feels like when you do that, gnawing on that sexy fat lip of yours."
All I could do in response was sigh into his mouth. He tasted of the virgin lemonade he had after the show, and the bitter bite of his last cigarette, delicious in a hardened, unapologetic way. My fingers found the silk of his wavy brown hair, and I twisted it, my hips grinding against his abs. He grabbed the back of my thighs and brought them up to circle his waist, crashing his groin into mine. I clenched around nothing, desperate to feel him inside me, but knowing better than to unzip him. He took my hair in his fist and pulled hard, forcing me to stare at his face. My scalp tingled, but he didn't hurt me. Not too much. It felt like I was dipped in cold fire and caressed by a thousand feathers. My whole body tingled, and I'd never felt so awake in my entire life. He laid me on the queen bed and hovered on top of me, much like he had earlier on the sofa. And it reminded me I'd already lost the battle, the one where I drew lines and lived comfortably within them. Because, and this was the really sad part, I'd already crossed so many limits when it came to Alex Winslow, and not one of those decisions was conscious. He rolled his hips between my thighs, his erection sliding along my thin leggings and his jeans.
"Look at me," he said.
I didn't. Couldn't. This moment was mine. The fact he was in it was completely irrelevant, or so I tried to tell myself. I kept my eyes closed, kissing him fiercely.
"Look at me."
He took my hair in his fist and pulled hard, forcing me to stare at his face. Whatever he saw in my expression made him loosen his grip on me, but the intention was there. Alex Winslow played rough, in and out of bed.
"I apologize in advance."
He cocked his head to the side. "For?"
"Ruining you for any other man on this planet. I'm going to fuck you, Indy. So hard you'll think about me years from now, when you lie under your boring, missionary-loving husband. I will own every orgasm, every shiver, every wave of pleasure inside you. From here on out, it will be me, just me, and for that, I truly am sorry."
"You're so cocky." I ran my lips down his neck. And he did this thing where he ground his jeans against my sex through our clothes, fast and rough, creating so much friction my clit swelled and screamed for release.
"That doesn't make me any less right."
"Are you going to make me sign an NDA before we go to bed together?" I grinned, and for that, I got my chin bitten.
"When I fuck you, Stardust, you'll scream so hard the whole city will know I'm finally inside you."
I raked my fingers along his broad back, and it felt good, marking him back. After all the times he'd taunted, teased, and messed with me, finally it was my turn. He scarred me. I decorated him. But at the end of the day, we were both tainted by each other. "We're not going to have sex. I'm not super experienced." He pushed up from me, running his hand through his lightly stubbled jaw.
"Are you a virgin?"
I shook my head. "Nope, just, I haven't been around much."
"How many?"
"That again? Ugh. One?
When?
High school, junior year.
Give me his address when we get back to L.A. Promise I just want to talk.
He cocked one eyebrow up. I laughed and swatted his chest, and he locked my wrist in his palm and brought it to his lips, breathing hard against it. I shivered again.
Okay.
His tone was low.
No fucking tonight. We'll take it slow.
A kiss on the lips, the nose, the forehead. Jesus Christ, heart. I'm trying my best here, heart. Enough, heart. I'm tired, I said, even though it was a lie. I was buzzing and high and in need of a release. I wanted him to get the hell out so I could run to the bathtub and release the ache between my legs with my fingers. He pushed off me without an argument. It shouldn't have surprised me, but it did. Alex Winslow was an accidental rock star. I knew it when I watched his bigger-than-life figure moving in the luxurious hotel room and knew he didn't belong there. He belonged in some dingy underground pub in the bowels of London, screaming to the microphone about anti-fascism and anarchy. He'd lost his soul somewhere along the way, and I was just another piggy bank he shook, trying to see if what was inside resembled what he was looking for. And at that moment, I knew I'd take it. He was going to break the pig, and I was going to let him.
I found my well in the middle of the desert, he said from the threshold of my open door. Now it's time to drink from it. Every single drop.
Chapter 15. Alex. Moscow, Russia. The plane ride was the closest thing to hell ever recorded on planet Earth. Partly because Blake and Jenna were yelling at each other in decibels that threatened to break the aircraft down. She was on speaker since Blake had to answer emails simultaneously. But mostly because Lucas insisted on not getting the memo that Stardust was not for the taking, and lay beside her on the L-shaped sofa, gazing at the ceiling like a fucking John Green character, and talking to her about life. Which was ironic, really, considering the fact I was about to end his if he kept throwing himself at her. Alfie was curled up beside me, playing a video game, and making sure I didn't use any of the laptops or mobile phones around us to go on the internet. I was bored and agitated, and fuck, hadn't I told her she couldn't hang out with Waitrose? Obviously, I had to put my point across more blatantly, because subtlety is clearly my forte.
Ever seen a cockpit from the inside, Stardust?
I asked Indy from across the room, sprawled on a recliner, high and plush as a cathedral. She looked away from Lucas and at me lazily, putting her patched dress down. She was sewing every spare moment she had. Compulsively. Wasn't that the only way to make art?
So many sexual innuendos from this one.
Alfie smirked to himself, eyes still hard on his Nintendo screen.
You know the answer to that question.
A scowl warned me not to screw with her unnecessarily. Fair enough. I did know the answer. The only times she'd ever been on planes had been with me, and I'd never offered to show her anything other than my boot inside her arse as I sent her away. I shot to my feet and sauntered over to them, stretching my open palm in her direction.
You'll like it.
Lots of buttons to push. I enunciated the last sentence, in case Lucas didn't quite understand what kind of fire he was playing with. I wasn't a match. I was the kind of flame that burned down an entire forest.
I can show you, if you prefer.
Waitrose looked over at her, still holding the next patch she was meaning to sew. Surely he couldn't have been that daft. But of course, he knew exactly what he was doing. He wasn't only pushing my buttons. He was prodding them so hard they cut deep. Ignoring him, I turned my head back to her.
Time is money, Blue.
I used the nickname Blake gave her, for no other reason than to remind everyone they didn't have exclusivity on anything Indigo Bellamy. She scooted her perky bum from the sofa and followed me, silently refusing my hand, which was fantastic, because it only served to turn me on even more. Her defiance was refreshing. She should patent juice and give it to the next girl I dragged into my miserable life.
"Thanks for doing that,"
she muttered behind me. Sure. I had no idea what she was referring to. My mind was set on one thing, and that was finding out what color her knickers were today.
"Can you take a picture?"
We were out of the main space, advancing inside the narrow corridor.
"Of what?"
She hesitated.
Me in the cockpit?"
I'll show her a cockpit. She was still mid-step when I pushed her hard against the bathroom door and locked us both inside. I had no illusions about making her a member of the Mile High Club. She needed more prepping. Still, messing around was part of the process, so I needed to make sure she wasn't skipping any classes. Her back dug against the sink as I lifted her thigh up and curled it against my waist, dipping my groin against her clothed cunt without warning. This couldn't have been a comfortable angle for her,